Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Jonathan Anderstrom, co-founder and president of Creed Interactive, and we're going to talk about the culture of deep work. This episode is brought to you by Abstract, design workflow management for product design teams using Sketch. With Abstract, you can version design files, present work, request reviews, collect feedback, and give developers direct access to all specs, all from one place. Sign your team up for a free 30-day trial today by heading over to goabstract.com. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello.
Thank you so much for making the time for us today and for coming on board.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
So before we get started on the topic, tell us a bit more about yourself and how you started Creed Interactive.
Certainly. My wife and I co-founded Creed in 2007, so it's been a little over 11 years ago. I came from ad agency and technology firm background, seeing how other firms did great work, but identifying ways to improve upon that work. And so when the opportunity presented itself to start the company 11 years ago, we decided that we were going to change some of the status quo on how work is completed and the way in which we do it.
That's awesome. So tell us a bit more what kind of work you do. Who's your typical client?
Sure. So we have a firm based out of Minneapolis-St. Paul area here in Minnesota in the United States. And we work with largely Fortune 1000 and Fortune 500 companies where we take a great user experience, great user interfaces, and combine that with deep applications. So on our team, it is represented both UI designers as well as backend developers. And we work exclusively at trying to find where the intersection between these technologies and interfaces live.
That's great. So what are the differentiators in your work? What are typical projects?
Yeah, typical projects would include things like e-commerce systems, intranets, extranets, different types of portals, basically anything that has a user interface with it that does something beyond just a marketing site. We'll do those as well, but our applications have interfaces and actions that help a user complete a task or interact with another business in a meaningful way.
Awesome. So how large is your team?
We have a total of 30 members on our team. 20 of those are the equivalent of full-time. And then we have a group of dedicated contractors we work with as well.
That's amazing. So let's talk about deep work. And I would love to hear, so you've been in business since 2007, which is 11 years, really, really awesome. How has your working style and your team working style evolved over time, and what brought you to that deep work idea?
Certainly. So initially, we started the business out of our basement, and it was just me and then my wife and co-founder. And then we added in some different virtual contractors to extend our team as we got too busy for the two of us to handle. At that point, too, we had a couple of young kids. I kept on running down stairs to my office in the middle of conference calls with major clients. And that was pretty disruptive. So we decided that we needed to get an office. We located an office in downtown St. Paul. And it was just a very small 350 square foot office that could only fit two desks. And I was there largely by myself. And I found very, very great large blocks of time to be able to achieve complex tasks and to really focus and kind of get into a groove of work where I was able to be highly productive. Inevitably, what ended up happening is two things. One, we continued to grow. And then two, I realized that I was much more satisfied working on a team than I was as an independent contributor to these different projects that we were working on. And so we decided to hire our first full-time employee back in about 2008. So we brought in Dave, who then was followed by our third hire, or actually our second hire, whose name was also Dave. So it was me and the two Daves. in this tiny little office where it was so small, if we swung our chair around, we'd hit one another. And what has started off being a very productive environment ended up being very disruptive, where just somebody would have a question for me and I'd turn around and I'd lose the train of thought that I was on. And it could take me 15 to 30 minutes sometimes to get back into the deepness of what I was working on, some of the complex systems that we operate with. And so we decided this just isn't working that well. And at the same time, I attended a conference where a gentleman by the name of Jason Friedes, who's the founder of 37 Signals that creates a popular project management software called Basecamp and some other products. He was speaking about the importance of deep work. And at the time, he and a team of eight individuals had created Basecamp and were running it decentralized all over the world. They had tens of millions of dollars of revenue and only eight salaries to pay. And that was the extent of their expenses. So just think about the productivity and output of that team. And they thought that this is going so well. What if we brought everyone into Chicago, opened up an office there, and just think of what our productivity could be. So they relocated everyone from London, Australia, all over the world to Chicago. And what they found is that their productivity tanked as a result of that. And they were trying to figure out what gives? Why is this so much harder to work together? And the concept that he first identified for me was this idea of deep work, of having large blocks of time that are uninterrupted, that are much more productive than highly interrupted times. And so other psychologists have researched this further since then. There's even a book by the title of Deep Work out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the
Cal Newport.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And the research shows that having blocks of between 2 and 4 hours of uninterrupted time, you're able to be much, much more productive than highly interrupted. And the concept is similar to sleep. When you're sleeping, you'll slip into what's called REM sleep, which stands for rapid eye movement sleep. And it's where all of your deep rest during your sleep happens. It's a lot of times when you're dreaming. And the same is true about work. And Jason referred to this as REM work, the idea that you can fall into these patterns of deep work that are highly productive, uninterrupted times that help you achieve your goals at a much quicker pace than being interrupted. And so we just decided, what if we did an experiment? What if we only started coming into the office 2 days a week, and then 3 days a week, we all worked remotely? So we'd all be in the same spot 2 days, we'd all be remote 3 days. What would happen to our productivity? And what we found is because we're in such a creative field, programming, designing, coming up with complex solutions to complex problems, it really is a huge benefit to have these blocks of time uninterrupted. And so the other thing that we identified is that having coordination times where we can help each other overcome roadblocks is also very important, because someone can be off by themselves for days or weeks on time, cycling through the same problem, and all they needed was another person's perspective or somebody's experience to bear into their situation where they could then overcome that roadblock very quickly. So we needed both. We needed these blocks of time, and we needed chances to overcome roadblocks and to work through them together. So we came up with this concept of 3 days remote, 2 days in the office, and we experimented around with different variations of that for quite some time, but found that it worked best to have Tuesdays and Thursdays be our office days, and then Monday, Wednesday, Friday be our remote days.
How did you come up with this ratio? What kind of experiments did you run, and what didn't work out? I'm very curious.
Well, when we first started with the Daves, it was the three of us. We eventually added Tina to the mix, and we'd all just look at our schedules and try to identify what days should we all come into the office, because it made no sense for two of us to come in and then two not to come in, because we won't be able to coordinate everything we needed to coordinate. So over a course of time, we recognized that managing four schedules at once to try to find those open days was becoming increasingly difficult. And we just needed an establishment, a schedule. So we started off Monday, Wednesdays. We got used to that for a little bit. And then somebody's kid situation changed where they needed to have daycare a different day. So then we switched again. And eventually we just got into a pattern of being like, okay, 2 days a week, let's do Tuesday, Thursdays, because then you're usually never more than one business day away from being able to see somebody face to face and whiteboard a complex problem or overcome roadblocks or get everyone in the same room and look at the same screen in the same way. Not that some of these things can't be achieved through screen sharing software, conference calls, and we'll still do that. But there is something magical in the creative process too about being around peers that help you be more creative too.
Definitely so. So as a member of a remote team, my first question would be, how do you protect your productivity while being in your remote deep work mode? So how really separate from the environment are you? Do you block off all notifications, or how does it work for you?
Yeah, so there's two different types of communication. There's either active communication or passive communication. And so on our office days, we highly encourage active communication. So we give each other permission to interrupt one another on those days. If you have a quick question, if you need to pull people together for a status meeting, those are your opportunities to do that. It's a cultural norm and something that everyone has accepted together as a group. On the remote days, we still need to communicate, but we will use passive communication. So we use things like Slack and emails for passive communication. We recommend that individuals turn off their notifications or put it on sleep mode so that they only are checking them at intervals that they would decide to check. And that allows them to still keep these uninterrupted blocks of time, but allows each individual to decide, when am I going to now take a break, check in with the rest of the team, and then move into another time block that's uninterrupted. So the difference between these passive communications and active communications is the difference between getting interrupted in the middle of a complex algorithm or a complex visual layout that makes you have to restart basically the whole thing, and talking to someone around the water cooler about a project when both of you are in the state of mind to be able to discuss something like that.
Awesome. Are there any productivity techniques that are especially popular among your teammates? For example, one could be Pomodoro technique, where you have chunks of time, let's say 20 or 30 minutes of deep work, whatever that is. Or let's say there is a time block method that we've discussed here in the podcast a while ago. I'm going to link to that, where more periods of time are encouraged, let's say 4 hours, which is great for truly deep creative work like designers or developers. So do you have preference towards any? And what about your teammates as well?
Yeah, we leave that up to each individual. The point of having these time blocks is to allow people to work when they work best. So on Slack, we have an availability channel that we allow individuals to post what their anticipated schedule is for the day. If you do need to get a hold of them for some reason actively on a remote day, we know where people are at. So that allows people that work best in the mornings to do that. If people work better late in the evenings for a period of time, if they want to log off early and then log back on late in the evening when they work better, we allow them to do that. And so we've given our team a lot of flexibility on the best way to do it. For me, the best way that I work is to time block and to have these periods of usually between 1 and 2 hours for me before I need to take a break, where I can really focus on an individual task. And I work best in the mornings typically, as a lot of people do. So I'll try to put some of my hardest tasks during those days. Sometimes that is on a Saturday morning as well. You know, I'll cut out early on a Friday afternoon in order to allow some time on Saturday morning when I'm fresh and don't have all of the activities of everyone else around me happening at that point as well. But being remote gives me the flexibility to do that.
So just curious, for those days when you are in the office, how much work do you get done, or is it just like zero works in all meetings? You mentioned you encourage active communication, but does that mean that no work gets done at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it really depends on each individual's role within the organization. So I would say that our designers get a lot of work done those days. Some of our developers get a lot of work done. When it comes to some of the more senior members of the team that are leading teams as team leads or as managers, they typically will get less work done those days because they're coordinating everyone else and trying to overcome roadblocks. We've also developed a system for assigning work that allows people to know what they should be working on each of those days. So every 2 weeks, we do something called Agency Agile. Easy to say, a bit of a tongue twister. But within Agency Agile, we break down assignments for each team member for the next 2 weeks. So that they know what is expected of them and how many hours we're allocating to each of those projects or tasks for that 2 week period as well. So for each person, it's a bit up to them if they want to time block and do the more complex tasks at home, or if they want to try to do some of that in the office, they're welcome to, with the understanding that it's going to be interrupted at a greater degree. So it's not that we're necessarily not doing work in the office. It's just that we're probably saving the more complex tasks for when we're working remotely and able to focus on it more deeply.
So let's say our listeners want to adopt something like that in their companies, so they have an ability to come into the office or not to come on certain days. Are there any special mistakes that you have made and then eliminated that they should avoid on their, you know, path towards that deep work?
Yeah, I think one of the challenging things for us early on was because we weren't by each other all the time, we didn't know what each other were working on. So we needed to change the way that we measured productivity and change the way that we assigned work and tasks and expectations of one another. So I already described a bit how we assign work to our team through this Agency Agile process. The other thing that we did was just tracking our time, and a lot of designers have to do that. So just using some simple time tracking software to identify what tasks are being had. But on the back end of that, we needed to have some sort of mechanism to measure estimated effort with actual effort. And our project management team has had to spend some time identifying ways to do that so that we could see if actual and estimated were matching, then great. If there was a discrepancy, if somebody was coming in way over or way under, we needed to understand why. And because we weren't face-to-face to figure that out, we needed these tools to do that. So one of the practices that we have with our project managers is to check within our time tracking software, estimated versus actual on a weekly basis, and then just have those conversations in real time with the individuals. Because oftentimes, if something's running over budget, it's not because that person's not working hard. It's because there's a roadblock that they are having difficulty overcoming and they need help on. And one of our learnings is that each person has a different threshold that they have to hit before they'll ask for help. And so trying to identify what those thresholds are for each individual allows us to then be able to be either more proactive or less proactive and trying to dig out of them what they may be hitting. So one of the practices that we also enacted was having 2-time-a-week stand-up meetings with an entire company where each person will tell the whole company what roadblocks they're experiencing. And that allows us to very rapidly try to break through those roadblocks and gives us a culture where it's okay to ask for help. And it's even expected that the most senior people on the teams are admitting their shortcomings or where they're having difficulty and where others can help them.
That's a fantastic idea. I was thinking you're going to say, you know, we're sharing progress reports and success stories, but you're sharing problems, which is a completely different spin on stand-up meetings for the team.
Yeah, we started off trying to do more traditional stand-up meetings, but what we recognized is the value of that was not so much in sharing the information because everyone already knew what each other were working on through our process. and nobody really cared what you were working on that day, as long as the work was getting done. What we cared more about was just identifying those roadblocks. The other piece of the stand-up meetings is creating a culture where you have opportunity to have conversations you might not otherwise have. Working early on, as I mentioned, in completely remote environments, one of the things I really missed was just the opportunity to ask somebody how their weekend was, or, hey, what if we had this crazy idea that's probably never going to go anywhere, but let's just talk about it and see if we can get any traction here. And it probably won't happen, but every once in a while, a great idea is generated that way that wouldn't have the opportunity to happen had it not been just in the conversational chit chat. And so it gives us a chance to kind of all break free from our tasks and engage with one another in meaningful ways.
I'm really envious of your team members. They must be lucky to to be part of this big thing.
Well, one of the things that we identified is in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis market, like many markets around the U.S., it's extremely competitive to hire technology and designer talent. In fact, we have some contracts with some of our clients that have been going on for over a year just because they can't find anyone to hire the position. And so we're filling a gap of full-time equivalency positions for them because there just isn't anyone to hire in our marketplace. And so retaining and attracting talent is a huge priority for us. And one of the things that we found is with this environment, it attracts the type of people that we want working for us. So one of our observations has been that this environment does not work well for everyone. We've had a few individuals where it's been obvious that they need to be in person every day with lots of supervision, lots of back and forth of someone telling them what they should be doing because they have trouble focusing and they have trouble staying on track and they need that. And we've just decided that for individuals like that, our environment is just not the right environment. So we've found ways to allow them to part ways with us in a graceful manner and go work somewhere else. But what it does is it attracts people that are self-starters, people that are well-organized, that are self-disciplined, that are hard workers. And those are the types of folks that at least we want working at our company. And by giving them that flexibility, it allows us to recruit much more aggressively against much larger and better financed competitors or even clients within the marketplace. It's been a nice differentiator for us.
That's a fantastic strategy in terms of finding new people. Do you have any special ways or tests or methods of finding out whether the person is really self-driven or not? Or is it more about, you know, having a test drive for, let's say, a month or so?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that we're continuing to work on. One of our models is to work with contractors, people on a contract basis, if possible. And if we're able to hire one of our contractors into a full-time position when our full-time positions open up, that's usually the first place that we look. So if we have a new UI designer position opening up, we'll go look at our pool of contractors and see who may be interested in discussing that position with us. That said, some of those folks enjoy being independent and do not want to join a larger team. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. In that case, we'll conduct our interview process and we'll do all the things you would expect where we'll talk to references. If allowed, sometimes we'll ask a designer to work on a freelance project for us on nights and weekends just to kind of get that interplay and see how they work basically in their overtime hours and to see how we could interplay with one another. But it is a lot of gut feel and a little bit of trial and error. But one of the other things that we've identified is that having a very deep talent pool, people that are extremely experienced and very talented at what they do, attracts other people like that. So anytime we can find somebody within our network that we've worked with before in a previous company with one of our team members or is a friend of a friend, we always try to start there.
Can't stop but ask another question. I've been exploring your website and I've been fascinated with the new design of your office. I'm not sure how new is that, but it's in the article somewhere. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. And it's gorgeous. So my question is, besides being just a gorgeous space and designy space, does that reflect some of your values and maybe some of the decisions that you've made to facilitate deep work as well as active communication, both of those.
Yeah. So when we bought this office space and renovated it, we were really torn on the purposes on why we wanted to do it. Because for years and years, we never actually had a client come to our office. And then when we did, we just recognized that it produced very little additional billings, or it didn't increase our win percentage on pitching clients dramatically. And so we kind of concluded office space doesn't matter. But then we just noticed that our team is incredibly important to us and we want to serve them very well. And so if we're going to build some space, we want to do it for our team, design it around our team. And other places I've been had built these beautiful conference rooms for their clients. And then all of the team members are tucked away in the corner in these tight little cubicles that are horrible to work in. We wanted to really reverse that and make the space for our team. So within our space, we have our stand-up table that is literally a stand-up table. Like it's table high, it's waist high, so you have to stand up at it for our stand-up meetings. We developed lots of secondary working space for individuals to pool together. We have the open working environment where individuals can pull their laptops next to one another and work for extended periods of time. And I don't think we would have created the space the way we did had we not have the structure of 3 days remote to allow for the deep work, because the office is really set up for active communication the way that we've structured it. One of the really interesting budget issues is that we have high-end creative space that's only being occupied 40% of the time during the workday. So 60% of the time, the space is completely vacant, which has led people to ask us, hey, have you gone bankrupt? Like, why was nobody here on Friday? Those types of questions when they walk by the space. So one of the things we did last year as a trial run is that we went and found a like-minded startup software as a service company where we decided to timeshare the space.
Oh, so, that's smart.
Yeah. So we were in the space Tuesdays and Thursdays, and their company was in the space Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then we had a reciprocity agreement where if we needed to use the conference room on one of the days the other team had the space, we would just clear it with one another ahead of time and reserve a conference room to book for that day. So that actually worked out very well and was a very economical way to basically have a roommate on some very nice space.
That's an extraordinary story. I've never heard of anything similar happening anywhere. You know, subletting for workshops or anything like that would make common sense, but sharing it entirely, it's so exciting.
Yeah, we were hoping that it would go on longer. Unfortunately, our roommates there have grown rapidly. They've been very successful so far. And so they actually bought their own building. So it no longer works for them, but we're exploring options to do that with another firm if the opportunity allows.
That's a great story. So as we're wrapping up today's episode, is there any further reading, maybe by you or by other famous authors that you could recommend on the topic besides, you know, Deep Work by Cal Newport, that people can get inspired by to increase their productivity in deep work?
Yeah, well, the book you mentioned is an excellent one. It's one that I've read and obviously has influenced my thinking more deeply. So I'd also recommend Deep Work by Cal Newport. There's a TED Talk that Jason Fried has done. It's on our blog, so perhaps we can post a link to that as well, where he speaks about deep work as well. So those would be two great places to start. And we can continue to post deep work articles on the Creed blog as well as we come across them.
Yeah, which leads to another question. Where can people find Creed and yourself online?
Yep, we're at creedinteractive.com, C-R-E-E-D, interactive.com.
Well, thank you so much, Jonathan, for sharing your story today. It was definitely full of insight, and I hope it helps our listeners to organize their own space and work and working style.
I appreciate the invitation, Jane. Thank you.
Thank you, and I hope you have a great day.